And this is Chris.
Good afternoon. I'm Chris Delaney. I'm with the Sonoma County Water Agency, and I'm going to basically piggyback on Anna's presentation. She presented more of the science research, and then I'm going to go into more of the engineering research that's being done for the Forecast Inform Reservoir Operations Project for Lake Mendocino. First, I'd just like to acknowledge some of the contributors to this project. They include John Mendoza, Brett Witten, Rob Hartman, who's in the room, Dave Reynolds, and Julie Kalansky. So just a quick overview of my presentation. First, I'm just going to provide some background information into the Forecast Inform Reservoir Operations Program, or we also just call FIRO. Also provide some background on Lake Mendocino. And then I'm going to describe the model that we developed to evaluate potential FIRO alternatives for operating Lake Mendocino. And then I'm going to present model results, lots of model results. And then I'll close it out with a summary of our findings. So just some background on FIRO. So Lake Mendocino was selected as a demonstration project for the FIRO program. And the objective is, as Anna stated, is to improve water supply reliability, but not increase flood risk to downstream communities. The project's being led by a steering committee, which consists of members from the agencies shown here. But most prominently, they include the Army Corps of Engineers, NOAA, CW3E, and Sonoma County Water Agency. So in 2015, as Anna mentioned, the steering committee completed a work plan that basically lays out a roadmap for evaluating and potentially implementing FIRO for Lake Mendocino. And we are currently in the first phase of that plan, which is to prepare a preliminary viability assessment, which we will hopefully have completed this summer. So just some background on Lake Mendocino. It's located near the headwaters of the Russian River watershed. There I have it circled in red. It was formed by the construction of Coyote Valley Dam in 1959. And is operated for flood control by the Army Corps of Engineers and for water supply by the Sonoma County Water Agency. The watershed area is approximately 105 square miles. The max water supply capacity of the reservoir is 111,000 acre feet. And a short distance upstream of the reservoir is a facility, a hydroelectric facility called the Potter Valley Project. This is owned and operated by PG&E, and it basically imports water from the Eel River into the Russian River for power production purposes, and a portion of that water then flows into Lake Mendocino. So in fall of 2006, PG&E implemented a license amendment for their FERC license. And this resulted in very significant changes in diversions through that Potter Valley project. And that's summarized here by this bar graph. On the left-hand side, we have conditions prior to the license amendment. And then on the right-hand side, this is conditions post-license amendment. So the blue bar is the diversions, and the orange bars are total inflow into the lake. So as you can see, resultant of this license amendment, not only did we see large reductions in diversions, but also large reductions in total inflow into Lake Mendocino. So this has created fairly significant water supply challenges for us as the water agency that manages this reservoir. So really, this is one of the main reasons we are pursuing forecast informed reservoir operations for Lake Mendocino, to hopefully gain back some of that reliability that was lost. So Anna went into this. So this is the operational guide curve of Lake Mendocino. And so I'll just briefly brush on this. But it's basically a seasonally varying guide curve with reduced water supply capacity during the wet season to maximize flood space. But then as we get drier in the season, it expands to 111,000 acre feet. And so this this seasonally varying guide curve has an impact on water supply. So here I've basically shown water years 2012 and 2013 as the top lines. Those are storage hydrographs, and then the bottom lines are cumulative precipitation for both those years. So as you can see, both years resulted in approximately the same amount of precipitation. In fact, 2013 slightly outpaced 2012. But the timing in which that rainfall fell and on the watershed was very different, and how that actually resolved into water in the reservoir was very different. Basically in 2012, we had much of the rainfall in the spring, so given the guide curve, we were able to bank that water. In contrast, in 2013, the water fell in December. That water had to be released in order to maintain flood space in the reservoir for future storms. Unfortunately, they never came. So this basically, was leading into a very long and protracted drought, which I'm sure we all well remember. So it was not an ideal scenario. So our goal with FIRO is really to look at ways that we can incorporate forecast information in order to build flexibility in the operations of Lake Mendocino so that we can hopefully store more water during the wet season. So to evaluate FIRO alternatives, the Water Agency developed a model. I have a simple schematic there, the model on the left-hand side, but just in summary, it's just a simple reservoir management model, water balance model, operates on a daily time step, and it only evaluates conditions in the Upper Russian River. So this is a reach that extends from the Potter Valley Project down to the city of Healdsburg. It's about a 70-mile reach. The model includes six model junctions, which basically coincide with longstanding USGS gauges, and then as well, these are forecast points. Most of them are forecast points by the River Forecast Center. So I'm going to present to you two hydrologic scenarios that we modeled. The first scenario is just a virtual test, if you will, of one of our FIRO alternatives that we did this past season. And so to do this, we used real-time forecasts from the California-Nevada River Forecast Center. And it's an ensemble flow forecast. It's a 59-member, 15-day forecast. And then the other hydrologic scenario I'm going to show you guys is we're going to look at historical conditions. So this is a model that evaluates conditions from 1985 to 2010. And this was made possible by a data set prepared by the River Forecast Center, which is a hindcast of their ensemble flow forecast. So this is basically what the forecast would have been each day from 1985 to 2010, given their current forecast scale. So I'm also going to show you two scenarios. The first is just existing operations. And then I'm also going to show you an alternative that we call ensemble forecast operations. This is, so far in our analysis, this is shows the most promise in terms of potential implementation for Lake Mendocino. It's basically a risk-based approach that was developed by the Water Agency, and it's a non-guide curve approach. So just an overview of how this ensemble forecast operations alternative works. It basically takes the ensemble flow forecast prepared by the River Forecast Center. It then does a storage forecast. It then uses that storage forecast to do a risk analysis. And then that risk analysis is used to calculate a flood release. And the model basically does this each day. So each day it does a forward-looking 15-day mini simulation in order to calculate a flood release. So first I'm going to present the results of the virtual test we did this past winter. So I'm just going to show it to you basically as a story of three hydrographs here. The top hydrograph is, this is storage in Lake Mendocino. The middle hydrograph is Lake Mendocino inflow and release. And then the bottom hydrograph is flows at the Hopland Junction, which is a city downstream of Lake Mendocino, which is highly flood prone. So just to point out some of the lines there on the figure, this is the guide curve. And then this other dotted line is, that's a deviation line to the guide curve. So the water agency requested this deviation in order to store more water in the reservoir this past year, and that was actually implemented about mid-January. That's why you see that curve bump up. So here I'm just showing right now, this is just conditions for December, and the operations test was evaluated from December all the way to May 10th. So really, December wasn't too exciting. Basically, we had a couple of relatively small events that really just primed the system to get things going, to really sort of make things interesting. So we, you know, these first events basically filled the reservoir, and in fact, storage got above the guide curve. So the Corps began making flood releases in order to bring storage back down to the guide curve. Just in contrast, this is the results of our FO alternative, and as you can see, it just continues banking water. It's not looking at the guide curve. So it's just storing the water. So on January 3rd, things started to get really interesting. This is the storage forecast for January 3rd for Lake Mendocino. And the model basically evaluates each ensemble member individually. And the challenge is here is, you know, which ensemble member do you use? I mean, this is a really huge spread in terms of results. And in fact, you know, our max ensemble member basically predicts that the reservoir is going to overtop. So we probably don't want to manage to that. So how we evaluate this is we evaluate it against a storage threshold. And the storage threshold here is just basically the maximum storage capacity of the reservoir, which is 111,000 acre feet. And we look at the risk of storage exceeding the storage threshold. So this risk analysis can be shown here in this bottom panel. And so the red line there is that's basically our forecasted risk. So this is just basically the percentage of ensemble members that exceed our storage threshold at each forecast time step. So that forecasted risk is then evaluated against a risk tolerance curve. So that's our blue dotted line there. And the model basically calculates a release necessary in order to mitigate that forecasted risk. So I know I mentioned that this alternative is not a guide curve approach, but really it is. It just doesn't use, you know, the standard storage guide curve that we're used to. It uses a risk guide curve. So for this particular forecast day, the release was 2,000 CFS. That was the release the model determined was necessary in order to mitigate our forecasted risk levels. So back to our hydrographs. So basically the model held this release of 2,000 CFS for 5 days. So each day after that January 3rd forecast, the model looked out and said, I still need to release 2,000 CFS in order to mitigate risk. And so the reason all those days are the same, and this is actually the maximum release that can be done given those storage levels. So the result of this is, you know, this pre-release basically drew down the reservoir storage levels. In fact, drew it down below the guide curve. And then basically the storm came in. So our green dotted line there, that's the inflow into the reservoir. So basically the reservoir goes into flood operations. So basically we're trying to, you know, reduce flooding to downstream communities. So the model reduces releases, and the result here is, you know, we have storage levels that then jump up. But also looking downstream, we were successful. We did not increase flows for those flood peaks. So now if we fast forward 2 months, basically the most active months, January and February, we basically see this process repeated 4 times throughout those 2 months, really active 2 months, where basically the model, you know, forecasted very high risk levels and then made pre-releases in order to reduce storage. Then the went into flood operations where releases were reduced and storage levels jumped back up. So just some observations to point out is that our FO alternative, it basically held storage levels below observed for much of those 2 months, just in trying to mitigate the forecasted risk. But another thing to point out is if you look at the flow peaks, we see that the flow peaks approximately match observed for almost all those peaks. So we're not indicating very much indicated flood risk. So now I'm just fast forwarding to the end of the simulation here. So basically March and April, I'm sure as we remember, the storm intensity decreased significantly. So our FO alternative just began banking water. As well, observed storage got past the guide curve, so it was able to just bank the water. And at the end of the season, we ended up virtually about 5,500 acre feet ahead of our observed, which was really encouraging for us because we were expecting something to be very much, much closer given that it was such a wet year. So we were surprised to see that we actually did predict banking more water than observed. And so now just to take it a step further, so if I project out through the fall, here once again our FO alternative is in red and forecasted current operations are in blue, the spread widens even more because we'll likely have to make a flood release at the end of October. So we'll probably be even further ahead, about 8,700 acre feet. So now I'm going to share with you the results of our historical simulation. So this analyzed conditions from 1985 to 2010. So this is a storage hydrograph of Lake Mendocino. And once again, our FO alternative is in red, and existing operations is in blue. As you can see, our FO alternative shows storage levels above existing operations for most of the years, so we're definitely indicating some water supply benefit. This is probably easier to show in this plot. This is end of water year storage for 1985 to 2010 and plotted as percent exceedance. So as you can see, end of water year storage is increased for most of the years in the distribution except for the wettest years, which are probably not of significant concern. So we show a 20,000 acre foot increase in median storage, which is about a 36% gain. So once again, looking at conditions downstream at the Hopland Junction, which is a highly flood-prone city, this plot just looks at high flow conditions. So we're just looking at flows greater than 8,000 CFS. So it's a scatter plot of our FO alternative on the y-axis versus our existing operations on the x-axis. And so our red scatter points indicate instances where flows are increased above existing operations. Our blue indicate points where flows are approximately equal. And then the green show points where our FO alternative decreases flows. And then the black line is our one-to-one line. So I think the main take-home here is we don't show any instances of increased flow above flood stage, although we do show instances above nuisance flooding, but this is approximately balanced by instances where flows are reduced. So just to summarize, I think the main take-home here is the incredible work that's being done by the River Forecast Center and the very skillful forecast that they're providing. Oops, I'm out of time. I'm almost done. So you know, our goal actually is to implement our FIRO alternative on sort of a scaled back version of it in the coming years through requests with the Corps, major deviation requests. And we're actually starting that process now. Rob Hartman is helping us through that. So I think another conclusion is that we feel pretty strongly that FIRO will likely improve the water supply reliability of Lake Mendocino. And then as well, model results to date do not indicate any risk of downstream flooding. But really, further analysis is required, especially to evaluate that third bullet point of flood risk. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Chris, on your existing operation, is that measured to the post-2006 storage level or before? The 20,000 gain that you had?
Yeah, so the existing operations includes changes in Potter Valley project operations. Yes, so we actually created a model that simulated current operations of the Potter Valley project. Okay.
Yeah, when you did your risk analysis, I guess it was for stream flow increases, did you guys look at the risk of dam failure, consequences of dam failures?
We did not, because at this point we're sort of constrained in our analysis to evaluate the period from 1985 to 2010, because that's the year that we have hindcast data that we can really evaluate any sort of change in flood operations. So that is going to be a challenging in the full viability assessment, is we need to somehow, you know, evaluate FIRO for events that are larger than those that occurred in that period. I mean, that period does include the flood of 1986, which was the flood of record for the lower Russian River, but was not the flood of record or the inflow of record for Lake Mendocino.
With your watershed, it seems like you've got quite a bit of complexity with the fact that you're dealing with Eel River diversion as well, and your big water supply question really seems to hinge on how the Eel River can be utilized. And I didn't get a whole lot of detail as to how the Eel River played into your analysis for flood for river reservoir operation. Can you elaborate on why the Eel River diversion was reduced? What kinds of constraints do you have for using Eel River water, like the time of year you can divert? Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, so just to back up a little bit. So it's operated by PG&E. So we have no say in when that water is diverted from the Eel River. We don't coordinate with them on that. So it's really we manage to their operations. I mean, we can somewhat predict it because, you know, just like all reservoirs, they have, you know, operational constraints. But when it comes to hydropower, it can be really complex because, you know, there it's a function of power demand. So and that's not something we're in the business of doing, is trying to predict when they're going to make those diversions for power production. I'm not sure if I answered your question. What was your other question? I apologize. It's a huge factor for us. I think this goes beyond FIRO. The Potter Valley project is up for relicensing in 2022, and you know I think we're expecting anywhere from status quo to even further reductions. So I mean, it really sort of gives further weight to projects like forecast informed reservoir operations. I mean, it's something that we really need to address because there is a good portion of the Russian River watershed that is dependent on that water. So we're trying to get creative.
Hi, Chris.
Yeah.
Can you go back to the graph that you had, all the ensemble traces of storage, and then you had your, I think you called it your acceptable risk or your risk tolerance curve on
there? This guy right here?
No, there's another one that you had. Yeah, that bottom one. Yeah.
Okay.
Can you talk a little bit about how you create that tolerable risk curve? And if you thought about moving it up or down, if you have, you know, a couple years of drought in a row?
So that's a really good question. that was done through an iterative process of moving it up and down. And I wouldn't say it's definitely not exhaustive. There's still a lot more work that we will likely need to do with that curve. Most specifically, we probably want to do some sort of optimization process to really optimize that curve. But to date, for the preliminary viability assessment, it was just calculated iteratively. And so basically our parameters that we were, our design parameters for setting this is that we did not want to increase any uncontrolled spill volume when compared to existing operations, but we wanted to maximize water supply. So that was basically how we developed that.
Yes, I have very quick, probably simple for you. Do you base on the forecast 5 days QPF to make a decision whether you're going to release a reservoir?
So we're using a hydrologic forecast from the River Forecast Center, which is out to 15 days.
15 days. So to run your model, do you use, what's your time increment, del T? Is it 1 hour or daily? Or
it's daily.
Daily.
Yeah. So at this point, it's daily, although with the full viability assessment, we'll have to, increase that resolution likely to hourly, maybe 6 hourly. We're still evaluating that.
I see. And then do you have any plan to use NOAA's monthly outlook, 3 months? That usually have you can get a QPF for the monthly. Instead of you using 2 weeks almost now, but do you have any plan to use NOAA's monthly outlook? That one you can get QPF also.
I think we'll evaluate that in the full viability assessment. It's not something we've evaluated yet, but it is something that is potentially under consideration. So you're saying use the forecast out further than 15 days?
Yes.
Is that
so
the question?
Then kind of look, see the general trend for the season. Yeah.
Yeah, possibly. I think once you get past even 10 days, the forecast skill drops off so significantly that to inform flood releases, we're a ways out before we can use flow forecasts a month out to inform flood operations. How do you feel about that, Rob?
Rob, why don't you wait a minute so you can use that microphone.
So the this process is based on the GEFS ensemble runs, and so that's where the precipitation and temperature forcings are coming from. There, for Chris's process to work, there would need to be some other ensemble generation of precipitation and temperature beyond that lead time. You could get that from the CFS V2 or something like that, but the it remains to be seen, and honestly, there's not a whole bunch of skill in beyond 2 weeks. And I think that Chris showed in his work that the controlling duration was something around the 8 to 10 day period, where it really didn't much matter what happened after that, that the decisions were being based on what was happening in the first 8 to 10 days on average. So one component of FIRO is to make a strong case that the seasonal, sub-seasonal forecast skill should be improved to the point where it's actually actionable in this sort of context. And so this sort of environment gives credence and a rationale and a place for those types of forecasts to be applied once they're skillful enough to be trusted.
Thanks, Rob.
We're at the end of the time for this section, so thank you.